In the last few weeks, we have been looking at the first two chapters of Matthew's Gospel. And if you want to hear what we have done, you can go to the website. But very simply, Matthew is showing in his Gospel that Jesus was going to relive all the history of Israel in order to become the one Messiah for the whole of the nations. And that's a bit of a jump. Because normally we hear about Jesus really worried about the people of Judea, the Jewish temple, and all the traditions that the Jewish people had up to that moment. And that's why this is such a breakthrough in so many ways that many times we miss because we don't talk about it from this perspective. But in the fact that the Magi, who were from the Far East, wherever that was, came all the way to Bethlehem and acknowledged the fact that this Jesus was someone very, very special. In fact, it must be an extremely special gift because the size of the star and the mobility of that star leading them to this place certainly was a testimony that Jesus was here not just for the Jewish nation, but here for all the nations. And in Matthew's quest to indicate the rejection that Jesus would see in his life as his messiahship unfurled, and the acceptance he found, we have the story of the acceptances from the birth of Jesus and the messianic hope of even the people from the Far East, and also the rejection that we hear in the story of Herod trying to kill the son of God, or the babe, by doing the massacre, which we heard about last week, and even this day, finding that the people were a suspect that he was probably not going to do any good to the child, and so we have the Magi going home by another way. And that, too, is a very important piece, because underneath that is not so much, if you look at this whole gospel as the journey of faith, underneath they're going back by a different route. Really what happened was, I'm going to illustrate this from a different perspective, really what took place is once they encountered the Christ, they went back in a very different place. They found a different way of life. And that's what I'd like to talk a little bit about this morning, and I'd like to jump from Matthew's Gospel because you're familiar with the details of the story. And I'd like to introduce you to, if you are not at all familiar with it, the poem by T.S. Eliot, The Journey of the Magi. It's a remarkable piece because it's a monologue, and in that monologue, one of the Magi, a Magus, tells about the trip to Bethlehem, and in the process, coming out of the desert, the first section deals with their life in the desert, and then the second part deals with coming into Bethlehem and encountering various things. Like on the hill, they see three trees, which is reference to the crucifixion, and there is a galloping white horse that skips off, which, if you read the book of Revelations, happens when the coming of the Messiah occurs, the white horse of God, the white horse of grace and power appears and runs through the field. And then at the end, we find that he is also experiencing a change of life, a change of heart. And so I'd like to read this just for you. And you can go online and actually hear T.S. Eliot read this to you. He does a marvelous job. Obviously, he's the writer. I'll try to do this so that you get a sense of what he's talking about. When we come to the end, that's really where the focus is, okay? Just know the first part is their journey, the second part is in Bethlehem, and the last part is his reflection. A cold coming we had of it, just the worst time of the year for a journey, and such a long journey. The ways deep and the weather sharp, the very dead of winter. And the camels galled, sore-footed, refractory, lying down in the melting snow. There were times we regretted the summer palaces on slopes, the terraces, and the silken girls bringing sherbet. And then the camel men cursing and grumbling and running away and wanting their liquor and women, and the night fires going out and the lack of shelters, and the cities hostile and the towns unfriendly and the villages dirty and charging high prices. A hard time we had of it. At the end, we prefer to travel all night, sleeping in snatches, with the voices singing in our ears saying that this indeed was all folly. Then at dawn, we came down to a temperate valley, wet, below the snow line, smelling of vegetation. With a stream running and a water mill beating the darkness, and three trees on the low sky, and an old white horse galloped away in the meadow. Then we came to a tavern, with vine leaves over the lintel, six hands at an open door throwing dice for pieces of silver, a feet kicking empty wineskins. But there was no information, and so we continued, and arrived at evening, not a moment too soon, finding the place. It was, you may say, satisfactory. All this was a long time ago, I remember, and I would do it again. But set down this. Were we led all that way for birth or death? There was a birth, certainly. We had evidence and no doubt. I had seen birth and death, but had thought they were very different. This birth was hard and bitter agony for us, like death, our death. We returned to our places, these kingdoms, but no longer at ease there. In the old dispensation, with an alien people clutching their gods, I should be glad of another death. It sounds somewhat depressing, doesn't it? And yet, I think there's a great wisdom and a great insight that T.S. Eliot offers us that many times I think is lost for us. I know a few years back in preaching on this given day, I said there should never be a stable without a cross present. The reason being that the birth of Jesus was the birth of any child. Isn't it true what the person becomes and how the person touches the world around him or her that gives value and meaning to his or her life? In our world, certainly what we accomplish and the accolades we can pile up for ourselves gives us a sense of not only ownership, but certainly a sense of belonging, a sense of importance, and a place in the world that we serve. And so that, I think, from our educational system all the way through our lives, keeps us going to somehow accomplish, achieve. And when we come to the end of our years, we find ourselves maybe reflecting on how well I did or didn't do. Maybe sometimes we are more reflective of the failures than the successes. And that is why this is such a very important gospel. Because T.S. Eliot is suggesting that Jesus' birth was the beginning of something so new that anyone who encountered that Jesus would never be the same, would be a stranger in his own familiarities, and would be searching now for something more than the gods of his past life. This Magus, who is speaking here, certainly had an experience, whatever that experience was. But he saw it not so much as just the pure birth and the delight of birth, but he saw the reality that birth and death go hand in hand, side by side. In fact, in his journey, he sees death as the beginning of a whole new experience. What dies for him is all the things that he's held sacred all of his life. The fact that perhaps he came from money and lived in the palaces. Perhaps because he was a very knowledgeable and wise person, he had great status and he had great presence in his community. He was a respected person. But coming into the presence of God, he was brought to a new sense of humility. And humility is not false humility. It is not being somehow humiliated. It is coming with a sense of dignity to who he really was, who I really am. And someone once said, anyone who approaches God will recognize how truly insignificant he or she is. Not because that's God's wish, but that's because when we stand in the presence of that present God, we can feel very little except a humbled self. That is a self that knows the truth of who I am and what I have accomplished and what the meaning of my life may be. Every time we approach the stable, thank you, Skip, for this beautiful display. Skip does wonderful work. If you have a good look at this when you leave, you notice we have an assortment of makers of these things. We have, for example, three camels. Two look fairly normal. Then there's one on steroids in the back. He's from another tradition. And then we have the three magi who come from, we bought them at Kmart a few years back and used them. And then we have Mary, Joseph, and Jesus from our little nativity set. So, but you get the image. We are a mixed mash of a whole lot of things. But coming to the stable for T.S. Eliot in this reading was an act that made him very much aware that life and death are one, and that when we stand in the presence of God, we have to be stripped away of all the things that bind us up. And that's why I think it's a very simple jump from there to us. We proclaim, and we have for a while since I've been here, we've been talking about the world being one person. We've been talking about our relationship with one another as brother-sister. And we have been talking about the coming of the cosmic Christ. And the cosmic Christ, remember, is not the Christ of the Gospels, unless you are reading John's Gospel. Because that Christ goes beyond all the definitions of anyone else's God. That Christ is all-inclusive. That Christ is for all nations, for all people. It's universal. And we believe it is that Christ in which we have been created, from which and in which the universe survives. It is that Christ. It is our very breath, which is why I chose the blessing today at the end to kind of reflect that. But it's important for us, brothers and sisters, to recognize with all that rhetoric and all that certainty we have in our logical thinking, our theology, it really comes down to this. Isn't it true, and we have all experienced this, that when something happens in our life where we are laid low, whether it's a physical problem, emotional problem, psychological problem, stress, whatever it is, when we are laid low, what presses on us the most is that somehow we have failed. Somehow we didn't quite make it. And you may find yourself, as I, in those moments, deciding how others did so well and I did not. How others had the accomplishment and the achievement and the praise and I did not. Brothers and sisters, the truth is that from the very beginning, we have been dealt a system that sets us up for exactly that kind of feeling. From the beginning of the scriptures, that got dogmatized into a statement about original sin, that we are all born into the state of sin. We have been doing catch-up, and we do catch-up and catch-up and catch-up because, sadly, We have been taught from the beginning to reject everything around us as significant, and it's up to us to make the difference. The truth is, brothers and sisters, we need to talk not about original sin, but about original blessing. Because God created the universe. And if God had anything to do with creating the universe and all of us in it, and God saw, according to our scriptures, before Adam and Eve, that it was all good, then, brothers and sisters, we can stand before God. We can come to encounter God there, and we can walk to the table here to encounter God and find not a humiliation, but an awareness of who we really are. And who we really are is much more than the sum total of all the things we have done and all the things we have become. Who we really are is an experience of the God who created us, an experience of the God for our brothers and sisters, that they too may touch and know and come and see. For that to happen, when we come to the table, we must let die all of our expectations, put aside all of our definitions, give up all the things that have been our world in order for God to create something new. I believe it with my whole heart that every one of us is invited at this universal table to find the truth about himself and herself, and there to find recognition indeed that God is with us, that we are here to touch, we are here to see, we are here to listen, we are here to be transformed. But only if we remember that there is birth and death. You cannot have one without the other. And no one will experience God unless he or she and I am willing to die to the other stuff. That's heavy, I know. But as the poem ends, after his awareness of all that has taken place within him, he says, "I should be glad for another death, for another encounter, for another possible choice by meeting God." Jesus taught us that. And so let us celebrate this epiphany, that we can come to the table and experience life, birth, and death, and know something altogether new. Amen.